Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 17th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host for this evening, Sierra. Lavendar is on special assignment, and she'll be back with us next week. Our featured guest this evening is Don Daniels, author of Evolution Through Contact, Becoming a Cosmic Citizen. Don is also a commercial airline pilot with a major international airline, as well as a long-term truth seeker. While most pilots choose to stay silent regarding UFO sightings and or ET contact, Don is not one of them. In his new book, Don writes candidly about his journey from curiosity to experience to understanding. From his interest in UFOs and ETs since grade school to his first UFO-ET experiences with Dr. Stephen Greer and C. SETI, to his descriptions of contact and communication in recent years, Don provides an interesting mix of humorous, philosophical, and inspiring stories and commentary that are sure to not only capture the attention of the reader, but also lead them on their own journey of personal discovery. He's combined what he learned from his contact experiences with years of study as a Rosicrucian mystic to weave a very engaging philosophical journey for the reader. While in the process of writing his book, he had a chance meeting with our own Sierra Nablina, co-host of Starseed Radio Academy, through a mutual friend. Sierra had just watched a movie that had brought back a flood of memories from her experiences 18 years prior in Colorado Springs, and she needed to talk to someone about it. She was impressed that Don considered the probability that her experiences were real and did not ridicule her, but instead offered some concepts and suggestions that made sense to her. Over the next several months, Sierra and Don had many discussions about what had happened to her as well as what was currently happening. While both Sierra and he had a strong sense that her hybrid daughter was trying to make contact, it took the assistance of a friend of his named Tashina to make the connection. Don's book is available on Amazon.com. Now, at the top of the show, we'll have another segment of High Strangeness with Anastasia as she discusses life as a starseed and some of the strange happenings she's experienced. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening. And if you have a question for Don, the number is 917-889-8292. And then you have to press 1 so we know that you want to come on the air. And if you like our show, please remember to click follow on our show page and then tell a friend about us. For our new listeners, we have a main site called starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment with this week's segment called High Strangeness with Anastasia, followed by Don Daniels. But first, I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing at least a week beforehand. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so please make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this evening, Sierra.
Hello, hello. It's so good to be with you this evening.
Hello, Sierra. We're glad to have you with us, as always. And we are going to get started first with our segment called High Strangeness with Anastasia, and then we will be bringing on Don Daniels. So here is High Strangeness with Anastasia.
Good evening, everyone. This is Anastasia. I want to welcome you to our segment tonight, High Strangeness with Anastasia. I want to start tonight's program by letting you in on a story that I found from the Olive Press, which is Spain's English daily news website, according to their header. The story is titled UFO Claims Surround Military Jet Mystery on the Costa del Sol. Now, I want you to know that this is about the southern region of Spain in Andalusia, so that may help you place this in your mind where this is. The article says that the residents of Benahavis in Estepona saw a trio of fighter jets undertake a mysterious 5 a.m. sortie on Easter Sunday, and these people believe that the planes may have been tailing an alien craft. While the authorities refused to comment on the incident, according to the Olive Press, they claim they were inundated with calls and emails from highly concerned residents. There was a British reader who asked to remain anonymous that said they were clearly tailing this strange-looking craft. He said, "I cannot describe what it was, but it was long and thin and had flashing lights. It was definitely not a plane or a helicopter. It made a very strange sound and moved slowly before suddenly shooting off at top speed." Another witness, who happens to be married to an Air Force engineer, also said, "It was an eerily humming sound, nothing like I have ever witnessed before. We've lived on various Air Force bases in the UK and abroad. It was the most bizarre sound, not easy to explain." Another person revealed that he had reported the strange goings-on to police, but the police had acted, in his words, suspiciously. Now, this incident came just days before another mystery incident over Bath in the UK, where locals claimed to have seen a long, thin-shaped craft chased by military jets. And while many officials claimed that it was a drug-related flyby, here's what many of the locals had to say about that. "No pilot in his right mind would fly low and at night in mountainous areas for fun or to show off," said one resident. Another resident said, "Night exercise by any military flying operations are not authorized over built-up areas day or night. The noise from the planes was very loud, so I don't know how anyone in Estepona slept through it. It felt like we were under attack." Other residents said, "It was so frightening, I thought it was going to crash into my house. The noise was incredible. It was like standing on the runway behind a jet engine. My grandchildren were crying, the dogs were going mad, and I could see lights going on in houses all over the place. It was circling around, and it seemed like it was trying to dump fuel. We were watching it from our balcony, and at one point it flew about 600 feet above the house. It was really strange and erratic, and the low-level stuff was quite scary." The Olive Press contacted the local airport operations center. A spokesman for the Gibraltar airport said that they weren't aware of the incident since Gibraltar airspace, which is only open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., was closed at the time. So there you have it, another situation where people know what they saw and there's official denial. Let's move now to an article that I found in the Huffington Post at huffingtonpost.com. The title of the article is UFO Encounter Revealed After Almost 40 Years by Ex-Military Pilot. It's a Huffington Post exclusive. The article starts out by saying that on the night of February 6, 1975, Marine Reserve Squadron Captain Larry Jividen was piloting a T-39D Sabreliner. It was a combat trainer and utility aircraft with five naval officer pilots on board on a special training flight. They didn't know that the evening would evolve into a game of tag with an unidentified flying object. Jividen hasn't spoken about that experience from nearly 40 years ago, according to the Huffington Post, until now. The 9-year Marine Corps officer and later commercial airline pilot had taken off at twilight for a round trip that began and ended at Pensacola, Florida. According to the pilot, "At about 9 o'clock we were descending from a high altitude, around 33,000 feet, and I looked off to the right side of the plane where I saw a solid red light at our 1 o'clock position and altitude." He said, "It was not flashing like normal anti-collision lights flash on airplanes. I thought it might be some other traffic, but I wasn't sure. So I called Pensacola Approach Control and said, "Understand, we are cleared for the approach, but we have traffic off to our right. So who's first for the approach?" The traffic that Jividen and the other five crew members saw was mutually described as a solid circular object about the relative size of a kid's marble held at arm's length. They were informed by ground crew that there was no other traffic in their vicinity, and they became concerned that the mysterious object had not shown up on radar. So the pilot asked for clearance to deviate from their approach and to turn directly toward the bright red UFO just to see what it does. As they turned toward the object, it turned toward their plane. According to the pilot, it suddenly flew from right to left across the nose of our plane and just stopped at our 11 o'clock position. At that point, I started to speed up to see if I could close in on the object, and as I did, it was pacing me in front. In other words, as I would speed up, it would speed up. So I decided to descend to place the object against the star field to make sure that it was actually solid, and then I climbed so that I could silhouette the object against the Gulf of Mexico. Jividen reports that the five-minute encounter came to an end when the reddish UFO flew away at a very high rate and disappeared over the horizon in the direction of New Orleans. After the crew returned to Pensacola, pilot filled out an incident form, and that was the last he heard of the episode. And nobody else heard about it for more than 3 decades. So there you have it, Starseed, a couple of stories from the UFO case files that encompass thousands of stories over decades and generations of human history. And to end our program tonight, I want to share with you a wonderful little story that I had and experienced, one of my many experiences that occurred also in the year 1975, just as the story that we just covered. I was living at the time in Mount Shasta. It was a late evening in the summer, about 11 p.m., and I was attempting to get from one place to another using a shortcut, which was a logging road. And as I was driving along the logging road on this beautiful summer's evening with the car windows down, looking out and admiring the wonderful starlight, beautiful stars, vivid, I happened to notice that there was a star to my left that appeared to be moving. In fact, it was moving. And as I went along over the period of maybe a half mile, it got closer and closer. And I pulled over to watch this star, thinking that perhaps it was another UFO sighting. Well, to my wonderment and surprise, it was indeed a UFO sighting. It was a close encounter sighting of an amazing kind. So it was not a long object with colored lights. It wasn't a red blob. It wasn't simply a moving star or a star with whirling colored lights. As it approached, it began to take shape and form into my field of vision until I could see that it was a craft, large, very large, round with a dome. And along the edge of the craft, this magnificent thing that I was looking at, there were portholes, of all things. And through the clear, what I would call glass, I don't know what it was made of, but there were clear openings into the craft, and there were people lining the inside of this vehicle, this space vehicle. And the beings that I could see were human like us, at least they appeared to be human. They were watching me, watching them. What an amazing experience to be observed on that level by beings that clearly were not from this plane of existence. What an exciting thing to happen. So that is one of my UFO case stories, and I would enjoy hearing yours. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's short segment of High Strangeness with Anastasia, and I would love to hear from you. I would love to have the honor of having a session with you and helping you sort out some of your own high strangeness experiences. That's all for tonight, and we'll talk again next week.
Wow, that was a perfect segment, Anastasia, because Don Daniels is with us, and he is going to continue along this same kind of line with Sierra. So, Sierra and Don Daniels, you're both on the air.
Oh, thank you so much, Ariel. Don, are you there?
I'm here.
awesome. I wanted to start by talking just a little bit about how I met you and the circumstances in which I met you, and then we can start talking about why you wrote the book. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds great.
Wonderful. You know, this is my good friend, Don Daniel, and I came across Don a couple of years ago when I started to have the integration process when my walk-in was starting to, when my walk-in was first starting to integrate with me as a braided walk-in. And I didn't understand what was happening, and I had come across a gentleman through Landmark Education that called himself UFO Joe. And he had introduced himself that way, and I looked at him and offhandedly said, well, you and I should talk sometime. And this was before I was really willing to talk very openly about my experience with the Grays and the hybrid program I was a part of, the carrying the hybrid child for some months and then going to NORAD, being showed all the technology. And I called Joe. Actually, Joe called me and said, hey, I'm in town, because he's from Utah, and I was up in Denver, Colorado. I'd love to get together with you and talk to you about your experiences. Well, we got together for a short, you know, little while, and he was so astonished with my story that he thought that he might call in a couple of other friends, Don Daniel and Jeff Peckman. And so we all got together at Mimi's, and I shared my story again, and everybody thought that was pretty amazing. And we ended up going and seeing this movie. What was it called again, Don? It was just
The Fourth Kind.
Oh, yeah, The Fourth Kind. It was just horrible.
Don't bother. It's a horrible horror movie.
You know, it was just based out of fear, you know, and it really rattled me, and it rattled me to my core about some of the experiences that I had had. And what I didn't understand at the time was during this integration process, a lot of memories were being unlocked, and I was basically being made to deal with some memories, some deep-seated memories that I had forgotten about, that I had locked way down deep inside and didn't want to deal with. And so I had developed this friendship with Don. I immediately hit it off with Don. And I think out of all the three gentlemen, Jeff is a good friend of mine, but we don't stay in contact like Don and I. Did. But I started having all the strangeness that was happening around my house and my home and in my relationship at the time, and my grandmother and mother was living with me, and everybody was experiencing all these strange things. And Don just really was somebody that I could go to and really count on it for, you know, for anything. And in fact, there was a couple of times one time in particular that I really struggling with some things, and I called him up, and he was working on this book, and I said, hey, Don, I need to talk to you. And he said, okay, I'll jump in the shower and blah, and I didn't even let him finish, and I said, no, now. And being the great friend that he is, he dropped what he was doing, he got in the car, and he drove down and met me at Mimi's, my favorite restaurant, and, you know, I was just like, I am going to lose my mind, you've got to help me. And it was about the same time that I met Lavendar also. So between Lavendar, Ariel, and Don, I was really given a lot of support, but I really wanted to let the listeners know that I've got a very great bond and friendship with Don. I respect everything it is that he's doing, and I'm really excited about bringing him on air today and having him share with you his experiences, you know, where he came from, where this all started, why he wrote the book, and then a little bit about the book, and go from there. So do you have anything to add to that, Don? Anything you want to?
Oh, I very definitely remember you saying, I need to talk now. And okay.
it was not like goodness.
Wait till dinner, it's like now. But it was interesting. You said, I hope you don't mind if I share a little bit. You told me that you were becoming very over-controlling. And,
yes. Mm-hmm.
It was bothering.
Yeah, go ahead
and
share whatever. I don't have anything. I'm keeping away from anybody now. So you're open to. You're welcome to share anything.
And so I simply ask you: do you suppose there's some aspects of your life that you felt were out of your control, like the experience in Colorado Springs and having a child out there in the universe that you couldn't communicate with and stuff? And you said, yeah. I said, well, do you suppose maybe you're grabbing onto what you can control, and you know, over controlling there to compensate, and you went duh.
Yeah.
And it just almost instantly cleared that up. So it was really kind of funny in a way. But I mean, you were going through a lot of trauma at the time too. But that that was a very interesting time.
It is, and you're just so down to earth and very practical. You know, you didn't inflate any of the experiences that I was having. You didn't, you know, add to any of the fear I was experiencing, because you knew that it was just something I needed to work through, my human reaction about some of the experiences that I had had. And I really appreciate how down to earth and grounded you are around all of that. Why don't you start by talking about, you know, some of your first experiences, what got you interested in this field, you know, touch on the time with Dr. Stephen Greer and C-SETI, and just kind of build us a picture of who you are and what your experience is.
Okay, well, actually, I think a lot of those experiences did help get me grounded enough that when you came along, I was able to help you. I went to my first, well, let me back up even a touch further. Dr. Greer was giving a talk here in Evergreen, Colorado, and I went running down to that after I got in from a trip, and just within an hour or so, he put things together that I'd been trying to connect the dots on for years and years and years, the major whys of the secrecy around the UFOs. And probably the major one is that these guys don't go zipping around the universe burning jet fuel. They have other energy technologies. And if we had those technologies available to us, it would put an end to the fossil fuel paradigm. So there's a strong, strong incentive for the energy powers that be to keep all that stuff buried. But anyway, all of these things just kind of went click. All of a sudden, I had an aha moment, like, this guy's onto something. He's got the bigger picture. So I got started working to get the time off to go to the C-SETI Ambassadors to the Universe training that summer. That was 1999, and I believe it was July. And, you know, I was working with the airline, and I didn't have any summer vacation that year, and I was trying real hard to get it all together. But I put together some of the Rosicrucian principles of creative manifestation, and I just put it out there. Okay, I'm going to make this work. I made the commitment. I sent in the application, sent in the money, and just trusted that it would come together. And I did manage to drop the trip that week and picked up another trip earlier in the month and didn't wind up losing any pay over it even. So we're down there in Crestone, Colorado, and the very first night with the C-SETI group down there, we had something come streaking in the southwest that looked kind of like a meteor, but not quite. It just was enough different. It really caught my eye. It was more of an energy streak. And then it stopped instantly. And it was instantly a big blue-white light down in the southwest sky, bigger and brighter than Venus. And I said, that's no meteor. Now, Dr. Greer took his laser pointer, and he went flash, flash, and the craft went flash, flash back at us. And I said, cool. Because as a pilot, we do that sometimes at night. We see another airplane, we'll flash our landing light, and if they flash back, we know they see us. It's just kind of a rudimentary nonverbal communication. We say, I see you. They say, I see you, too. We know we're watching each other. We're not going to run into each other or anything, so it's just kind of a way of saying, hi, I see you. So we did that with this craft, and it flashed back. Thought that's pretty cool. Somebody picked up a million candle power spotlight, flash, flash, and it went flash, flash, matched the pattern. And so I was just about to suggest that we try a prime number sequence, and as it became apparent what the sequence was, 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, as it became apparent what the number sequence was that we were doing, then wait and see if they would do the next one, see if we could start to alternate. I figured that way we could definitely prove higher intelligence. But before we could even do that, this craft shot a pale blue-white spotlight down at us. It was about the color of faded blue jean material, and not super bright, but just a circle around our group. We had 18 people out there that night, college professors, medical doctors, scientists, et cetera. And it hit our group with the spotlight. Everybody saw that. About half of us saw a very faint scan line go through it, like on Star Trek when the bridge gets scanned, but that's usually red. This was blue.
Right.
And then the light beam retracted back into the craft. The light beam literally got shorter. I have no idea how they did that. I said, cool, we've just been scanned. And that was my very first night out in the field. I said, does this happen all the time? They said, no, this is kind of exceptional. So that was my first night. But it's kind of like being in an earthquake. I don't know how many of the listeners have been in a significant earthquake. I was in the World Series earthquake out in the San Francisco Bay Area. I happened to be at a friend's house in Alameda when it happened. But when you go through one of those, it kind of shakes up your paradigm. The ground that you take for granted as being granite, being solid, shakes violently beneath you. It just kind of shakes up your anchor to reality a little bit and leaves you a little off balance for a few days. So even though I didn't actually, done some studying on UFOs and had been curious about them since I was a kid, when I had this actual sighting, and it was a good one, it left me a little off balance for the next couple of days, and I'm going, okay, is this real or am I deluding myself? And you know, all these BBs are bouncing around inside your head when you're trying to go to sleep. So it was interesting. But the next couple of nights, I'm seeing some very subtle humanoid energy form shapes around our group out in the field. We go out in the Baca at night, usually till 1 or 2 in the morning, and I'm seeing these very subtle humanoid shapes. And you stare at them too hard, you lose them. And so about the third night, or the third day, actually, I went to one of the local healers, and she and her daughter gave me a two-hour tune-up. They had these marvelous crystal singing bowls, and when they got the two of them going, the harmonics just vibrated every cell in my body. I could feel it all the way to my core. And I don't know what they did, but that night I was able to see these energy forms much more clearly and very humanoid. And so Dr. Greer's talking. When he took a breath, I said, Steve, do you see what I see? And he says, oh, yeah, I've been watching them for a few minutes. I said, okay. So we all got up, lined up on the east side of the circle there where these beings were, and there seemed to be one of them paired up with each one of us. And I'm standing about 5 feet in front of it, and it's about 5 feet tall. The face is not the classic gray. It was a slightly pointy chin, but the nose and mouth were similar to ours, a little smaller proportionally. The eyes were a little bit oriental, a little bit almond-shaped, but not the big bug eyes, which, by the way, Dr. Greer says are actually a combination sunglass night vision lens, so they can see in a wide range of lighting conditions. It's not their actual eyes. But anyway, it was a little more human than the classic gray. Neck was skinny, about the size of my neck, and the upper chest kind of reminded me of a chimpanzee, kind of lean and wiry. So I'm looking at this thing, and I'm going, okay, I guess we're supposed to be ambassadors to the universe. So I just kind of thought projected, like talking but not out loud, who I was and what we were trying to do, that we were trying to initiate some peaceful citizen diplomacy. And then I went receptive to see what impressions I got back. And I expected like a voice in the middle of my head giving me a few words, a sentence or two. And instead what I got was two very powerful, very distinct emotions, unconditional love and intense gratitude.
And wow. So tears in my eyes,
it just kind of set me back like, whoa, okay. So it was a totally nonverbal, emotional communication, and the more I thought about it, the message was entirely different from what I expected, and an entirely different format from what I expected. I don't think it was my subconscious sneaking through telling me what I expected to hear. I think it was a very real experience. And a couple days later, I got a RAM dump. It was like there was one Star Trek episode where history is just spinning by at an incredible rate and they had to jump through the portal at the right time. Well, it was kind of like that. It was like boom, and just a RAM dump dropped into me, and I'm going, whoa, I didn't get any of that on the way in. I'm hoping that'll come out at the appropriate times. And shortly after that, I was actually down in San Antonio with a brand new captain I was working with. I was a instructor pilot at the time, until I they found out I had seen some UFOs, but that's a whole nother story. I was working with this brand new captain, and he just, you know, just got his upgrade, and he was wanting to go celebrate. And this was the only night on the trip where we had over 12 hours where we could go out and have a drink. So we went running down to the Riverwalk at about 10:30 at night down in San Antonio, looking for anything that was still open. And we heard this bad music coming from this bar in the back of this little cove off the side of the Riverwalk. I said, well, at least they're open. So we go running in there. It was a little place called Tequila Mockingbird, which I thought was clever.
Clever. But,
it was Mad Dog Monday open mic night, and the locals were doing their poetry and songs and stuff. And it was mostly a college crowd doing their lost love laments and stuff. But there was one guy, probably in his mid-40s, got up and he read a poem called Star Child, and something in me just went snap. And I'm grabbing napkins and writing poetry stanzas and stuff, and I hadn't written poetry since college, and it wasn't that good back then. So I'm writing this stuff down, and I get back to the hotel, and I just start to fall asleep, and you get in that hypnagogic state there, right on the borderline sleep state where you're very receptive, and something else had come in. Oh, okay, so I turn on the light, write it down, because I knew I'd either worry about forgetting it or I'd fall asleep and I would forget it. So I just turn on the light, write it down. There's another one. By morning, it was practically written. And this was my first poem, Friends in High Places. A bold new world awaits us, a spinning on this earth, an end to wanton poverty, a time of happiness and mirth. Abundant, free, non-polluting energy, an end to hunger and disease. The possibilities are endless, floating cars, if you please. I have met with friends in high places. All this is possible, you see. It has already been given to us and should be cause for much glee. But there are those among us who do not want these things to pass. They would much rather stick it to us in the gas. Our friends and neighbors we betray. Their technology was given, stolen, taken. Also, these greedy people, huge profits could be making. The relationship was adversely shaken. Fossil fuels we keep on burning. Our environment, it is a crying. Big money these people are making, while Mother Earth, she is a dying. Minions of darkness have caused us this plight. The only weapon we have is to expose them to the light. Legions of covert workers will then march out from their cave. Humanity will have to wake up and learn how to behave. There is a new golden age a-coming. Of that we can be sure. We are working very hard, so you can stand the cure. The angels are on our side, that I truly suspect. Future generations untold our actions will effect. The world will get a lot bigger when we all realize we are not alone in this universe and see it with new eyes. If we fix our problems and do this as we should, we then will be invited to join the cosmic neighborhood. We have friends in high places. They want us to succeed. It is most important for us humans to persevere in this momentous deed. You can certainly help us in our epic quest. Join and work with us if you can stand the tests. A new universe awaits us, a chance to visit many places, an opportunity to meet new people with many different faces. New cultures, people's places, a much bigger view of creation, a future to look forward to with hope and great elation. And I wrote that back in 2000.
Beautiful.
That's wonderful.
So that was, actually, I'm not sure I wrote it, because it just came flooding through. I think I had some help from somewhere.
As we do.
Mm-hmm.
So then what was the next step for you then?
Well, I kind of became a CSETI junkie for a while, and I went to Joshua Tree, where we had a very high-quality sighting. We got on film for about 5 minutes. It was a golden-orange plasma glow craft. And actually, we were doing some remote viewing training during the day, and then we go out in the field and work on it. And part of the CSETI protocol is remote viewing. So we'll get into a meditation, just simple breathing meditation, go into the silence between the breaths, and then allow our consciousness to project out, try and find somebody who's in the area, basically, introduce ourselves, invite them to come back and work with us. Well, doing this practice at the hotel during the day, part what they do is put an object in a box or something, and we would remote view and try and figure out what it was, and then we'd look at it and see how our impressions compared with what it was. And towards the, then we went out and got dinner, and then we were supposed to meet up with our car groups in a smaller group and do a little more practice before we headed out to the field. And the I wasn't doing very well that night. Everybody had brought like a bag of potato chips or a candy bar they just bought, and it was nothing that had any vibrations associated with anything. And I was getting kind of frustrated. But the last exercise we were supposed to do was to remote view what was going to happen out in the field that night. So we're adding in the dimension of distance and time, projecting forward in time, which is really no impediment in the fourth or fifth dimension. Time is not linear like it is in our third dimension. And so I kind of mentally gave up. It's like it's not working for me tonight. And I just kind of mentally relaxed, and instantly it just came flooding in the moment I relaxed. I said, it's going to be a golden orange craft down in the southwest, midway between the trail and the road. It'll be 4 or 5 miles away. It'll interact with our lights a little bit. It'll stick around 4 or 5 minutes. It was just annoying, and it was a very high-quality remote view that was just flowing through me. And we had a Ed Dames remote view professional with us. You know, she'd taken the basic course for $1,000, and then the advanced course for $1,000, and then she had a private tutor. And, she thought she was, the professional remote viewer, and us amateurs were really, she was having trouble with it anyway. So when we got out to the field that night, out into the Joshua Tree Park, this event was already happening, and they had already, people were filming it. And we watched it, and I got a little film of my own. And then some fighter jets came scorching into the area, probably from 29 Palms, and this thing just kind of winked out, and you watch, and you watch, and even on our home video, you can see there's this flash as it launches. It was like on Star Trek or Star Wars when they jump to warp. And
right.
I saw that visually, and we've got it on home video, and I'm going, that Spielberg knows more than he's letting on.
Don't you know it? I mean, yeah. It's really interesting. I've had so many contacts, and then, the contact with the Galactic Federation of Light, and Spielberg was dead on about so many things. That man was channeling, I'm telling you.
Channeling,
and Gene Roddenberry.
Contacts or something. Yeah, Roddenberry, too. Of all the Star Trek episodes, I think I liked Next Generation best. Picard was much more mystical and intellectual and not so quick to go to guns.
I liked him, too. He was my favorite. It took me a while to convert over, but in the end, he won me over.
Yeah, I got my wife a T-shirt that said, Picard, Riker, the team for the future. This was during the presidential elections back then.
I'm loving this conversation. This is Ariel, because I am just a diehard Star Trek. I'm not. It's more than a fan. It's almost a way of life, because Gene Roddenberry was in contact with the Council of Nine and probably other galactic beings. And when you consider that the original Star Trek was done in the mid '60s, and of course, Kirk had to be a swashbuckler and kind of the way he was, but. There's actually a book called Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Watching Star Trek, so I'll just interject that, and you can carry on, Sierra.
I've got one called
perfect.
Physics
really
Star
is.
Trek.
Pardon?
I've got one written by a physicist that's called The Physics of Star Trek. It was pretty interesting, too. But anyway, over the years, my last year with the Sea City group, I was kind of tired. It was towards the end of the week. We'd been out till 2 in the morning every morning, and I just didn't have the energy for the full CSETI protocol. And ETs over the years have also have demonstrated quite a sense of humor. So I just kind of settled into my chair, very rapidly settled into that silence between the breaths, and I just kind of flippantly said, come on down and play. And as an afterthought, I added, or beam me up instantly. I mean, it's like waking up from anesthesia where there's no sense that any time has passed. I was on what appeared to be the deck of a craft, and I was surrounded by 10 or 12 of these little 3-foot-tall crustacean guys. The faces reminded me of a crawdad, but they had skinny neck, skinny body, skinny arms and legs, pincher hands. You could hear a gentle clack, clack, clack around the room as they worked, and their vocalization was a throat clicking, kind of like the Bushmen of the Kalahari, which made me wonder where the Bushmen got that very unique throat clicking language. But they're looking at me like, okay, who is this human that willingly put himself out here? And I knew I was totally safe. I could feel the concern, the compassion, the curiosity was just palpable. And I look at them, and I'm just towering over them. You know, I'm twice as tall as they are. And so I did like you do with kids. I sat down on the floor. I got down to their level, which in a way was indicating that I'm no threat to you. I'm wanting to meet you halfway. And I kind of mentally said, I don't know what the proper greeting is in your culture. And I got back an impression, you're doing just fine. And a couple, three of them walked over, and they're very gently touching me. It was like, reminded me of when a blind person feels your face to get an idea of what you look like very carefully. And they're just gently touching me with their pincer hands on my arm, which you'd think would freak you out, but I just knew I was totally safe. And I could feel them touching me. And about that time, somebody back in our group in the Baca saw a good meteor, and they shouted for everybody to look at the meteor. And it snapped me back into my body so hard it just physically hurt. It's like, no, I want to go back. The whole thing lasted maybe 15, 20 seconds, but I call that my close encounter of the crustacean kind.
I love that.
So, and it was actually funny because I thought it was a remote view, but later on I was taking an out-of-body workshop with William Bowman, who's one of the experts on out-of-body stuff. And I told that experience to him, and he says, you could feel them touching you? I said, yeah. He says, well, then it was an out-of-body experience. Your astral body had to have been there if you felt them. If it was just a remote view, then it was just your consciousness there. So I guess I had a spontaneous launch and didn't even know it.
Wonderful.
But I think at the moment I kind of mentally gave permission, said, or beam me up, that gave them the opportunity to take me to their ground where it was safer probably for them than coming to our territory. So
that's wonderful.
That was probably some kind of a test to see how I'd react to high strangeness. I'd call that pretty high strangeness. And
I would too.
I did okay. So it's been a very interesting experience along the way. Shortly before I met Sierra, though, a friend of mine puts on some workshops periodically for people who've had encounters. We'll get set up a weekend where people can get together in a private environment, set some basic confidentiality ground rules, etc. Share some of our experiences, let them know it's safe, that they're not going to get ridiculed, and then let them talk. And people will all of a sudden ram dump stuff they've been holding inside for sometimes 10 or 20 years. Because it's the first time they can talk about it, and you can usually literally see their shoulders rising as this ton of weight comes off of them. But I'd met this one gal at a conference that had talked about a experience. Oh, probably. Well, it was back in her teenage years, a UFO or ET encounter. She was kind of vague, and her step parents or foster parents were in the military. And she was at the Air Force base on the base radio talking about this experience. And when she came out, there was a Project Blue Book officer wanted to talk to her. And it got kind of ugly after that when she realized he wasn't just friendly and wanted to hear about her experience. And so, anyway, that's about all she'd said during this conference. So I invited her to come out to our workshop that we were doing a couple months later. And she kind of reluctantly agreed. And almost chickened out, and then she got an insurance check for just the right amount of money she needed for the airfare to come out here. So she came out, showed up. Friday night, she was. We get together for dinner and get acquainted. she was just kind of playing with her food and not eating much. And one of the other gals said, I had to show her how to use an ATM. I'm going, whoa. She said she'd spent most of her life on the Indian reservations, but that's fresh off the res. Saturday, she was really evasive about her story, but we also had a couple of misfits. One guy had an encounter that he didn't want to believe himself. He was seeking validation, but he really didn't want to believe it himself. And he just didn't come back on Sunday, and a couple of other people had commitments on Sunday. So it was a little smaller, much more cohesive group on Sunday. And as we're wrapping up, I said to her, Tashina, I know there's a whole lot more to your story than what you've shared so far. Now that you know the group a little better, you care to share a little more? She took a real deep breath, and she said, Earth is a very difficult assignment. And
wow.
My jaw just slowly hit the table. Okay, maybe I've got this backwards. Let's start over.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained that she's from a fifth-dimensional world that she didn't think we'd recognize, that she's here living among us. Her main mission is to help set up some schools for the new gifted kids, the ones we call Indigo and Crystal kids, that the schools label as ADD and ADHD, and they drug them into normalcy because they don't know how to handle them. And she was trying to set up some school programs where they could, really develop their full potential and flourish. And that was her mission. And she'd been working on getting education degrees and administrator degrees, which she now has. And she also shared a little bit of her native language with us, which is the throat clicking. She says the clicks are to trigger images, like telepathic images. So it's click, 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 click. It's just image, 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 much, much quicker than our verbal communication. And so that was turned into a very interesting weekend. That was an unexpected surprise. But a little later on, and we conversed a little bit, actually 6 or 8 months later, she was coming back out for a little bit of a reunion with the core group, and she, I told her that our cat, the vet, had found some tumors in the cat's mammary glands, probably from laying on top of the old CRT-type computer monitor where it was warm, and she'd be there when I was working. And so I told her, I told Tashina we were going to drop the cat at the vet when we headed out of town where we were going to meet up. And so a couple of weeks later, dropped the cat at the vet, went up to the meetup, called back the next morning to see how the surgery had gone, and the vet says, well, I showed you the tumors, right? They were about marble size. I said, yeah, you showed us. She said, well, I couldn't find anything, so I didn't operate. And I turned to Tashi, and I said, did you do something for our kitty? She kind of sheepishly shook her head, and I said, well, thank you. And I told the vet, it's okay, we'll pick the cat up on Monday.
Wow.
So, she's got some incredible healing abilities, too, and this was from, well, distance is no impediment, but it was from hundreds of miles away. So she's a very interesting person. When Sierra was going through her turmoil with the with her kid that was trying to get in touch with her, I also felt a very strong presence just as I was falling asleep and as I was waking up, but I couldn't quite make the connection. But the daughter showed up at Tashina's house. She just, I guess, followed the chain of connections until she found somebody who could bridge the gap between dimensions. And
well, actually, before you tell that story, let's tell the listeners that you and I spoke, and you had actually presented a question that didn't actually occur as an option to me. You were like, well, would you like to be in touch with your daughter? And we kept saying daughter, and we both were intuitively believe that she was female, and I was like, well, yeah, let's do that. And then you had given me some exercises to try, and I told you I was frustrated and I wasn't able to make connection, and I could feel a presence, and at the time I thought it was my daughter and was getting confused, the walk-in energy that was attempting to integrate with me, but that there is, you know, an entity that is my daughter that's out there. And so go ahead with your story so that they could track that, right?
Well, basically, at that time when all this was going on, I was conversing, sending some emails back and forth Natashina, and I mentioned what was going on with you and asked if there might be some way she might be able to help. And she kind of reluctantly agreed, and we set up a phone call where she blocked her caller ID and just called you at a predetermined time. And I think it'd probably be best if you just ran with what you want to share from what you two girls talked about that night.
It was really amazing. Actually, before I get into sharing what we talked about, if you want to share about my daughter appearing to her, that would be a lot of fun. Let's do that.
Well, what Tashina told me was that that Sierra's daughter, hybrid daughter, had appeared in her daughter's bedroom, and her daughter, who's half human, approached the being, the energy form entity. It wasn't fully physical. And apparently the energy field was so strong it literally threw her a ways across the room, and she sprained her ankle. So she called for her mom, and Tashina comes running in, and the being is apologizing for profusely, and the ankle's already red and obviously swelling. So she went running back to get some ice to put on the ankle, and when she came back with the ice, her daughter says, "It's okay, Mommy, she healed me." And then your daughter proceeded to tell Tashina some messages that she wanted to pass to you. And why don't you pick it up there?
All right. Well, there were several things that Tashina was telling me, but basically it was clues that my daughter was leaving me to try and help unlock memories and to help me through what I was experiencing at the time, was trying to integrate with my walk-in, which is tricky a little bit. You know, when you have a walk-in that's a complete replacement, then there's not much more to do than, you know, have your soul leave and that the contracted soul come in and assume, you know, your body and go on and do the mission that being said they were going to do. But when you have a graded walk-in, it's attempting to basically bring the consciousness of another being that's out of the third dimension. So it's a, you know, it could be third, fourth, fifth, so on and so on, dimension into 3D physical body. And so it was challenging for both me and the walk-in to actually get that integration process going. And so Tashina had been speaking to me. At first, I think we spoke for almost 3 hours. It was just do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. We just hit it off like we were just long-lost sisters. And she explained, she told that story from her point of view of my daughter coming and visiting with her daughter. And it just made me cry, you know. I just cried and cried, and I was so frustrated. And, you know, with all the gifts that I have and all the abilities that I have, I was so dumbfounded as to why my daughter couldn't appear to me. And the very basic answer at the time was I wasn't ready yet. I needed to go through this integration process, and that there was a lot of work that I was to do and really establish myself in before my daughter and I could have the ongoing relationship it is that I would love to have. And what became very evident in my conversation with Tashina is that a piece of the work it is that she was explaining to me that I'm to do with my daughter is actually help bridge between the third dimension to the fourth and fifth dimension, and possibly even higher than that, actually physically integrating communication and being an ambassador for Earth to all of the others, all of the other entities and souls that on the cosmic and galactic level that we will soon be integrating into, that we will soon be joining our cosmic brothers and sisters. But there was some really basic integral work that needed to be done on the physical realm between this dimension and that. And that's what I've been working hard at. You know, first it was the integration process and actually getting fully integrated. Then it's been the training that I've been going through. Then it's been being brought before the Galactic Federation of Light as an ambassador, as someone who actually speaks for Earth. And, you know, and then ongoingly, my training that I ongoingly have now, you know, we had Judy Carroll on our radio show some months ago, and her book, Zeta by Human by Day and Day by Night, and I ongoingly have a great relationship and ongoing talk to Carol even now as I'm going through my process of writing my story down. She's been a great help. And, you know, Ariel and Lavendar and I have all kind of adopted the saying now, and because it fits so perfectly, it's, you know, human by day and galactic by night. There's so much work that's happening right now with people that are, you know, sleeping at nighttime. And so it's just been a lot of great, at the time, it was frustrating. I was, you know, like the frustrated little teenager. I felt like that I want to know all the answers now, and I want to know why now, and I want to do this now. And I kind of go back and forth between integrating the information it is that I need and kind of throwing a human temper tantrum about, you know, what does all this mean? I don't understand. And it's interesting, you know, even though Don and I have been working together for a couple of years, he doesn't even understand the level of which I've grown and what I've integrated up to this point. So it's been a lot of fun, since he's finished with his book and is, you know, flying again as a pilot, you know, we've been talking and I've just been sharing with him, you know, all of the great opportunities that I have. I won't go into too much detail about what she said because I'll talk about that in my book, but it's just been an amazing experience to be connected with these souls, you know, with her and with Dawn.
Well, they say it's a teacher's greatest honor to have the students surpass your own abilities. And in some ways, you have launched way out there. I mean, you are way beyond some of what I've been able to do.
Well, thank you. And, you were just a big contributor to that, and I am so grateful, and that's why I was so excited about being able to bring you on the radio show and have people experience what you have to offer through this book, you know. So why don't you start talking about the book, Dawn? Talk about what led you to writing this book and how it changed as you were writing it.
Well, the original title was Evolution Through Contact, How to Meet Our Galactic Neighbors, Make Friends, and Evolve. And it started out as a how-to, how to prepare yourself mentally, emotionally, psychologically for your own contact experiences. And it evolved into something more, and I wound up changing the subtitle to Becoming a Cosmic Citizen, because that's really kind of what happened to me along the way. So it relays some of my stories, some of my experiences, but then I turn right around and get into what I learned from them, how I was able to grow from my own self-analysis, introspection, etc. And I try and lead the reader along the same path to where they can prepare themselves for their own contact experiences at whatever level they're ready for, and how they can progress along the way to where I think we're going to have open contact probably this year. And for people who aren't really quite understanding what that's all about, this book can really help them have the groundwork, the basis for which to experience that without fear, to experience it as a joyful reunion that it should be.
And that's precisely the point, right, is not to engage in this coming from any type of fear.
Right. And I think indications I've been seeing are that most of the negative entities have already been kicked off the planet. And I've long asserted that if you can hold yourself in the higher vibrations of unconditional love and oneness, that the lower frequency entities or lower frequency energies just cannot even enter your space. So if you can move yourself up to where you understand our fundamental oneness with everyone and all that is, then there's absolutely nothing to fear as you move into that higher realm.
Well said. And then the end of the book, it actually has people go through exercise. You actually give practical steps as to how to accomplish this, yes? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I have chapter exercises with a lot of the chapters, and then the appendix is on some remote viewing exercises, some practice stuff you can do to help develop your own skills. I was just flipping the book open here, and there was one thing I wanted to say when you were talking about your daughter, when you and your daughter kind of merged that night. in that automatic writing you did in the dark there, the very first sentence was, it's like two children trying to drive.
we forgot to tell them about that part, huh?
Yeah, well, go ahead. Launch right into it.
Actually, this is your show. Why don't you talk about it? I like the way that it's been, you know, an honor for me also. I actually have a chapter in Don's book where he talks about his sort of guiding me through this whole experience. So go ahead and explain to what happened.
Well, you were there. You experienced it. But basically you had one night that you were basically allowed to spend with your daughter before they moved you on into the other stuff they needed you to be learning. And it was, I don't know, was it more like a out-of-body travel or a
what was interesting is, it's so funny, I say you go and then I go. I'll just take it from here, Don. Just sit down, have a coffee, we'll talk. Okay, so I actually was coming along in my integration period, and I was having, again, my little temper tantrums. I like to look back on them fondly because we all have them, why can't I talk to my daughter right now? You know, I want to talk to her right now. I need to know for sure if this is a real thing or if I'm losing my mind. I already feel like I'm losing my mind. And so Don had given me some real practical exercises to do to connect with whatever entity it is that I kept feeling being present with me. And there was this interim attachment walk-in, because I would refer to him more as a masculine role, but he was very gentle and very kind and was with me all the time. And I had to start to develop a communication with this entity. And when I would go to bed at night or when I'd feel the presence of these entities, I would get anxious and nervous. I would find myself not wanting to go to sleep. I'd put off doing whatever I could and not to sleep. And it was just my way to avoid having to confront whatever it was that was happening. But instead of doing that this night, I sat on the edge of my bed with my back to the door of my bedroom. And I felt that old feeling, and I just took a deep breath in, like Don said, and I said, I can feel you. I know that you're there. So I acknowledged the presence, and I heard, it is time. Are you ready? And I took a deep breath, and I wasn't sure what I was agreeing to, but I was ready at this point. I had fully committed myself to this entire process, and I said, yes, I am ready. And I laid down and got myself to the space that Don talked about between the silence between the breaths, and all of a sudden I heard this giggling. So the best thing that I could compare it to is as if my daughter came into my body, came in almost as if it was a separate integration process, but it was temporary. And so I sat up and I acknowledged the presence, and I still wasn't really sure of who it was and still wasn't sure until the next day until I was able to help get it sorted out with Don, the experience, because, again, like he referred to before, it's sort of like having the solid granite beneath your feet, you know, shake. So my connection with reality, again, was being challenged. But I sat up, and it was this giggling and this joyfulness and this playfulness and just innocence, and it's just the most joyous feeling I've ever felt, being connected with her. And I started doing some automatic writing. Who is this? And it was so funny because I was trying to move my hand, and she was trying to move my hand, and we were laughing and falling down and acting silly. And pretty soon we were able to develop a conversation, and we got used to what was happening. And she would talk to me, what is this? And I would, because at first it was so overwhelming, I wrote, what is this? And it was her asking, and I said, fear. And she didn't understand the concept of fear because I was a little bit still unnerved as to what was happening. And the entire experience that lasted through the whole night, and I was up until about 7:30 in the morning from about probably 8 or 9 at night. And we had a long and joyous conversation. She was asking all different kinds of things about human beings and all different things about the life here that we live here, why the fear, why the hurt, why everything, why, and it was just just an absolutely precious and amazing experience, and I look forward to the time where we can communicate again. But unfortunately, right after that experience, I don't know if we held on too long. I don't know if it was, you know, you can't look back and say something was wrong, something about that was wrong, but I know that there was more, you know, I had to rush it. I had to say no now. And, you know, where my guides were telling me you need a little bit more time to actually expand your body and raise your cellular body to be able to have these kinds of experiences, because I am to physically be a bridge between the other dimensions and here. And I ended up getting really sick after that experience, actually having a viral and a bacterial infection in my body. And so I sort of acquiesced after that, and I didn't have to push anything again after that, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I don't care that I ended up being down for a couple of weeks and sick. That experience was priceless, and it was so important to be able to have that experience so I could move forward with the other work it was that I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. You said, I think you told me, I think it was that experience where you had very strong vibrations and then a strong jolt, and you were out much further than you normally went when you were doing some of your, you know, your work with people who'd passed on and wanted to send messages back and stuff, your empathic work that you do. You felt like you were further out than you'd ever been?
Absolutely. Consciousness was expanding. I was being worked on at that point to be able to handle more and more and more and more. So, yes, I absolutely was going further out. It's interesting. It's not like a point A to point B. It's as if you were to take your energy body, your mental body, your physical body, and expand it in every direction. So I was expanded. The expansion was tremendous. But, yes, that's the way I was explaining it then.
Mm-hmm. And you possibly just got overly exhausted that night and were susceptible to whatever bug got you, but
precisely.
But you're learning to pace yourself now, right?
I am, actually. I'm really, and it's not the same anymore. I've actually, once I've gone through the integration, the physical integration, and it was interesting, I went through a physical integration with my walk-in, which was unusual by Lavendar's terms. Usually it's, you know, an energetic type of integration but I went through a physical integration, which does make sense now, understanding a lot more than what I knew back then. But it's not as intense now, and it's a lot easier for me. I don't get wrecked as much as I used to back in, you know, coming back down or not knowing. But I still have my days. You know, I'm doing some pretty intense work right now, and I wake up in my human body, and I'm just like, oh, my goodness. And it takes me a little while to get grounded, and I have a lot of routine and things that I do now to try to help me keep myself grounded in the physical reality and continue to do my galactic work in the evening time. But, yeah, that racked me a little bit. But, again, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
It's kind of like me living in two worlds. I've got to be the professional airline pilot and at the same time out there exploring the larger truths that a lot of the, well, airline management would probably be a little uneasy about.
Precisely.
But relating to your experiences now, I loved your story about when they came and told you they needed you for a very important meeting up on the ship, and your walk-in kind of took over your body for several hours. And then when you popped back, the walk-in had to fill you in what had happened during that time. You were with friends when it happened.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I was in Idaho Springs, and I had was hanging out with some good friends of mine, and we're at a crystal store, and I am just all, everybody knows me to be like the crystal fanatic, and there are such amazing tools. And so anytime I go to a crystal store, I'm like in heaven. I just love these crystal beings. I'm just, in fact, anybody, any of my friends or anybody that's been any great, good, you know, any time around me, significant time around me at all, if they weren't collecting crystals, they are now collecting crystals because my passion just bubbles over, and it's very, you know,
you've
it's
given
very
me
catching
crystals.
People just, you know, can't help themselves. They get sucked into it, too. So we were actually, had just got done soaking at the caves in Idaho Springs. And the Indian Springs is what they're called. And there are these caves, and the Indians have been going there for thousands of years. And it's very mystical, magical waters. And I had had this really amazing experience where I was in this one pool myself, and I made this connection with this being. And this being I had the sense of, I had spent many lifetimes with, almost like a soulmate type of a being. Like the love and the connection was just tremendous. And this being is not in physical form right now, so but we were able to merge at this point in the waters, and it was just magical, and I just loved it. And beautiful experience, and we went to this crystal store, and there was one, two, four different people that witnessed what had happened. Was we come into the store, and all of a sudden, I'm very rigid, my face doesn't look the same, my eyes are a lot darker. My friends are, like, showing me these different things that they were finding, and I was just kind of giving that, like I couldn't be bothered, you know, that I was just sort of placating them when they were looking at these magnificent crystal beings. And after probably about 20, 25 minutes or so, I come slamming back into my body, and I got violently ill. I was like, I took a deep breath, and I was like, oh, what just happened? And I ran out to the car, and Heidi Studiani, my good friend Heidi, followed me out, and she also had, you know, had been just a wonderful support for me during this whole thing, and she saw something was going on, followed me out to the vehicle, and she said, what happened? I'm sitting in this rented SUV with my head on the steering wheel just trying to breathe. She's like, sweetie, what's going on? And I said, they needed me on ship, and they took me in the middle of the day. That was just very interesting. And then I could get flashes of different parts of the conversation that my friends were trying to have with me. And then not only did that happen, but whoever was driving my body at the time had bought several crystals and told me later on that there was information downloaded in the crystals that I was supposed to get. So that was a tremendous experience. And then I had to have a conversation with them, you know. Listen, you know, you can take me, but there's certain times that are off limits now. We've established those parameters a little bit more clearly now, but that was definitely an interesting experience. But they needed me on ship, and they needed me on ship now. They couldn't wait until I went to sleep, so up I went.
Speaking of setting parameters, so that's one of the main things we did with you that could be a great help to anybody in the listening audience. You know, where the time you felt that there were things out of your control, and so you were over-controlling on everything else. And I mentioned that, you know, you probably had made a soul contract level agreement to work with these people with the hybrid child before you were born, but you just didn't remember it consciously, but that you could also change your soul contract to whatever you wanted. And you could say, I don't want to have anything more to do with you, or you can say, I will work with you, but on my terms. You have to explain to me what you want to do. I have to give my explicit permission for each thing. And, you know, there were several options. And that's basically what you chose, was I'll work with you, but on my terms. And you took control. You took, found your own power, and were able to then start a much more mutually respectful relationship with higher-level entities that has turned into something really incredible.
And yes, and it's just, you know, your guidance on that was just so important. And I've had to be reminded of it a couple of times. You know, both Lavendar and Ariel has, you know, I'd call them and be like, oh my God, this happened, and they'd have to remind me again. You know, you need to, you know, tell them on your time. And that in that particular time, the response when I said, because I'd already laid out the parameters, you know, you can't just come and take me away in the middle of my day, but the response was, you were with close friends who all understood who you are and what your mission is, and it was an emergency, and we felt like it was a safe time to do that. And I said, okay, if you're going to do that, then help me develop a little bit more better technique into being, you know, sort of slammed back down in my body again like that, because when I'm sleeping, I can kind of rest it up just a little bit. But I was given direction as to foods and things and crystals and different other practices it is that I could do to help assist with that if they needed to do it. They're clear that it's an emergency only type of situation. But it was through your guidance that I understood that it was on my terms. And through understanding and the guidance that you gave me, you know, X, Y, and Z. And it was just so helpful. And I had to be reminded of it several times in the first year when I first started working with them.
Well, that sounds like your snapback was similar to mine after the crustacean contact, where it just jars your body so much that it physically hurts.
That's true. It's sort of like, ooh.
Yeah,
the experience of being, you know, connected on so many different levels, and that there's no separation between me and them, and the communication, everything flows, and then just kind of being slammed back down in a 3D body, it takes something, and it takes practice to be able to manage that.
Yeah, for me, it was just, you know, being pulled back so abruptly and unexpectedly that was the real jolt. But I also like the what you were telling me about when you were taken, or actually what your daughter said, where she was taken to a meeting with 9 women, and she got to choose who would be her mother, and she chose you.
Ah, yes. It's so great to have people around to witness your story, isn't it? Because these things I forget about. It is. Cool. It's so great to have the people around me to remind me of these things. Yes. That is something that I got in my work on ship, and I was actually taken back and shown that my daughter was able to pick whom she was going to be born through or be, you know, created through. And it was the circle of 9, and I was the one that she chose. And as I, you know, understand it now, my daughter is much different than, and there's different incarnations that can happen through the ET hybrid process, and it can be physical hybrid children, and it can be children that actually are non-physical. And although she was growing inside of me physically, there was a shift between physical and non-physical when she was taken aboard ship. So, and that's more of what there is for us to teach people about.
Hmm.
The bridge between the third and fourth and fifth dimensions.
Were you able to get much of an impression of her world when she was connected with you, or was it mostly her exploring our world through you?
During that time, it was mostly her exploring our world through me, but I got a lot of residual information left with me that I am still unlocking to today, because it not only were we able to communicate that there was a bridge, a connection that had started then. You know, there are more than just myself and her working on this project. There are many other beings from different star constellations that are overseeing this project. And so ongoingly, there's more and more information that is revealed to me. You know, as you had talked about earlier, that you were downloaded. And there have been many times that I've been downloaded, and the information is just now being put to practical use. It's now being discovered. And to answer your question is, if you can imagine taking that experience that you had, which you did such a great job at explaining earlier, the unconditional love and the light it is that you felt from those beings when you were on that outing, if you were to take that and amplify that by 100, it's the kind of world that this being comes from, pure light and love.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost blinding to be in the presence of.
And I think that's where we're headed. And
I believe it to be so.
Is to try and get people prepared for that, is to try and let them analyze their own thought processes, do some introspection, and think about, well, I pulled some little sneaky tricks on them. I'll ask in one of the chapter exercises, I'll give it away, a spoiler here. I have them imagine themselves as a person, an extraterrestrial living among us, and to think about who, you know, what kind of personality characteristics they would like in somebody that they were to become friends with or even share their story with, you know, who could you trust? You'd cross off raging egos or control freaks and that kind of stuff. But, you know, what kind of personality characteristics would you look for in somebody that you could trust to be a confidant while you were living among us as an extraterrestrial? And then I have them analyze, okay, who among your friends would be a suitable person to share with? And then I sneak up on them and I say, okay, now analyze yourself. Are you the kind of person that an extraterrestrial would want to share with, you know, to share the secret with? And so these chapter exercises kind of lead people through these kind of thought processes so they can analyze themselves, work on themselves, and evolve philosophically, mentally, spiritually along the way, and become ready for the events that are, I'm sure, coming here soon.
Very well said. And this is just a very practical guide to achieve that. You know, you start off with sharing some of your experiences, and then you go into very practical, very real ways that people can prepare themselves. And that's what I really appreciate about your book, is not only are you sharing a piece of yourself, you're sharing a little bit about our experience, but you're also giving something people can hang on to, they can really work with. And I appreciate that about about this book.
Yeah, it's not your typical "I was there, this happened" UFO book. It's a whole spiritual journey. And by the way, I was just looking at my bookcase here. Your experiences reminded me of the. Are you familiar with Hank Wesselman and his trilogy, Spirit Walker, Medicine Maker, and Vision Seeker?
Spirit Walker, but I didn't get the others.
Okay, well, Spirit Walker, you got the basic idea. Basically, he had these spontaneous shamanic launches to where he was seeing the world through another person's eyes. It turned out to be like 4,000 years in the future or something, one of his descendants. And eventually they came to the point where they were aware of each other. The other person could see our world through his eyes. The person in the future was actually a historian and was was greatly enjoying seeing how we lived in this time frame, and Hank was seeing the future through this other person's eyes. So they were kind of sharing, kind of like you, kind of a walk-in that doesn't take over. It was a launch to where two people shared one body and could and were aware of each other and were able to share experiences. So
wonderful.
Yeah, that was
wonderful,
an interesting
wonderful
correlation there. But we probably have got a lot of people with questions out there, don't we?
Absolutely. Ariel, how about taking a look and see if there's anybody who'd like to come on and ask Tom some questions at this time?
Okay, well, we do have a lot of callers on the switchboard, and if you would have a question or a comment for Don, you need to press 1 so that we know you want to come on the air. And we have one caller already, first one on the button, and I recognize the phone number here, so we are going to talk to Ralph. Hello, Ralph. Welcome. You're on the air.
So, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Hi. Great program. I appreciate taking my call. And I just had a couple questions for Don. Don't know why I did this, but as I was listening to Sarah and Don talking, I grabbed this crystal that I have, and I just noticed that I was squeezing it real tight. Wondering if something's going to happen. Nothing happened, I would think, but that takes my question. Don, what do you believe is a technique or a good tool we can do to raise our consciousness to a higher realm, and are crystals in any way involved?
Well, Sierra's more the crystal expert than I am, but the main thing I do is a basic oneness meditation where go into that silence between the breaths, expand that silence out with each breath to where it's longer and longer until it fills the entire time through the breath cycle. And in that state, you were at one with the universe, at one with the consciousness of the universe. The universe itself is conscious. And then from that point of consciousness, then just start to contemplate awareness itself. Not the sounds that you hear, but that by which you were able to hear the sound. So contemplate how it is that you are able to perceive. And then understand that every conscious, awake, aware entity in the universe is awake and aware and conscious in the same way that you are. And that gives you a foundation, a basic point of reference, of oneness with anybody you might meet from anywhere in the universe. So from that point of we are all awake and aware and conscious in the same way, we can start to form a relationship. And then from that, you can start to cherish the differences for what we can learn from them. As I fly internationally around, you know, all over Asia, Europe, South America, I've been to 5 of the 7 continents now. The people everywhere are very much the same. They're all people. They all want the same basic things, food, shelter, clothing, a better future for their kids. And that's the same anywhere in the universe. They want, you know, the same basic things. So from that, you can start the relationship, and then you can learn from their cultures all kinds of things that you might decide to incorporate into your own life. You know, the Chinese have got some very interesting cultural ideas. Japanese, Europeans, I mean, everybody's got a little different outlook on life, and just go in and explore what you can learn from them and what you can incorporate to make your life even more complete.
I'm sorry, I didn't get what you were saying about the time between breaths. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. It's a basic breathing meditation where you inhale slowly and pause, and then exhale slowly and pause, and be conscious of the breath going in and out of your body. And then it helps even if you can imagine the breath coming in through the top of your head and flowing down through your body and out through your feet, and let that breath cleanse any negativity or any toxins or whatever out of your system, and pass it on through your feet down into the earth where it's transmuted. And so with each wave of energy of a breath that flows through your body, you're becoming more and more settled and clear, and releasing any tension or negativity. And in that way, you can kind of settle into that pause between the breaths. As you do that, there'll be a moment of deep, profound silence in that pause. And as you recognize that, you can start to expand that a little longer with each breath.
That's very interesting. Is that information in your book?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I can't wait to get that. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling in, Ralph. Bye-bye. Okay, we have another caller with a question from area 310-383. You are on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Dawn or Sierra?
Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
I was listening to your conversation this evening, and quite some time ago, I think back in 1996, I was had the experience of working with a meditation teacher and him telling me that I had had a child from Andromeda, and that I could cut the cord with that child if I wanted to. And I found that kind of, I think I didn't really believe it, but so I said, okay, that would be okay to cut the cord. And at that point when he cut the cord, I just felt this really sadness and this energy shift that was quite profound. And then I kept saying, oh, no, we weren't supposed to do that. And can I reconnect it? And
no.
I really need Hello?
Yeah, I'm just...
Can
I say, can you reconnect? I can't say for positive, but I would say work on the meditation techniques and put the intention out there and see what happens. But the exercises I give in the book would be a good way to get yourself prepared for that, so if the connection happens, you'll be ready for it and you can handle it calmly.
Well, I even when I was telling you that I was hearing this tone kind of come in and out of my ears, it kind of felt like I have reconnected with that. But I just wondered, I've never, that I had made a conscious decision with a male being to have this child, and that's all the information that I've really had about that. And is this unusual, and have you heard of more of these kinds of things happening? And I was wondering if we'd be able to actually reconnect in a bigger way in the future.
Well, I think all things are possible. Unusual, there's an awful lot of unusual stuff that's happened in my life. These high strangeness events, we'd just kind of smile and say, well, there was another one, and then we'd dig in and try and figure out what we could learn from them. I think it's entirely possible, and if you're getting this sense that it's trying to reconnect, then I'd say start working on yourself, getting yourself kind of psychologically prepared, and put the intention out and see what happens.
I was living in Boulder, Colorado at the time, and there was a lot of strange events happening while I was in that area.
Mm-hmm. I'm up in Evergreen, not too far from Boulder.
Oh, right, yep. But, it was quite a learning for me during that time of living here, because so many different things were happening. But thank you so much for sharing tonight. I enjoyed listening to some other people who've had some of these experiences.
Oh, yeah, it's much more common than you'd think. The psyops, the psychological warfare-type people, are very effective at using the ridicule factor to try and keep people quiet. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm the only one that's had this experience, and if I talk about it, I'll get ridiculed. And people are trained through the movies and all this stuff to ridicule somebody who talks about it. So it's been very effective at keeping it quiet. But there was a Roper study a number of years ago, and I think something like 40 or 50% of the public have seen a UFO, and something like 5 or 10% have had a close sighting. And by the way, I'm jealous of who was it that did the high strangeness at the very first?
Anastasia,
having the close sighting where she could make out detail and structure on the craft and see people through the portals. I have not had that high a quality UFO sighting yet. But... apparently, I was chosen to help one of the people who is living among us, and she says there's a million of them on the planet right now of the high integrity extraterrestrials living among us, mostly observing, giving us a little nudge now and then, keeping us from blowing ourselves back into the Stone Age before we grow up, and if you were putting out the intention that you want to meet extraterrestrials and that you're ready and you've gone through some psychological preparation, then the odds are very high that you'll run into them in your daily life. They're just out there among us, usually in jobs that have a relatively high amount of contact, you know, like bank tellers or something like that, where they're interacting with people a lot. They tend to like to be in those positions where they can study humanity a little better. But they're out there, and you may just be surprised to find that somebody you know is not from around here. I was totally surprised when it happened to me.
So how are you sure? Because they look very humanoid, right? So
yeah, and I can't say that I'm 100% sure. I mean, I'm not going to ask her to go to a doctor and get some tests taken and stuff, because that would put her in jeopardy. Like I said, she's very psychically talented. It was interesting. We were setting up a encrypted internet chat program so that we could communicate a little more securely. And she's not that much of a techno geek. Her son was actually much better at that. But she's talking to me, and I'm talking, and she's apparently not hearing me. So I talked several times and nothing. So I jumped into the text window, and I started typing furiously. And she'd ask a question, and I'd type furiously, and she'd ask a question, I'd type furiously, and she started laughing hysterically, and I said, "What? What's so funny?" She said, "Your telepathy's working a lot better than your typing." So I figured, okay, no secrets here. You know, total honesty is the order of the day. And Sierra's more of an empath than I am. And, you know, Sierra, what impressions did you get from your visit? Are you convinced she's the real deal?
Absolutely. Absolutely the real deal.
I was wondering if you've heard of the praying mantis ETs, and I've had people see them very close to me, and I feel that presence, and they had scared some people at one point, and that's how I learned about the way they looked. I just kind of see the color and feel the presence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in the movies, there's two types of ET movies. There's the ones that are put out by the good guys to try and get us used to the concept and ready for contact. These would be like ET, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Avatar, etc. And then there's the ones that are put out by the dark hats, shall we say, the cabal, Independence Day and War of the Worlds and some of the dark movies. And they always seem to use either the insectoid or reptilian type ETs as something that we kind of naturally are fearful of. And yet I did have a very brief encounter in consciousness in remote view with the praying mantis type, 6-foot-tall praying mantis, and they were very kind and gentle, I understand they're kind of like record keepers, historians, that they're kind of keeping records of what's going on here, but I didn't get any sense that there's any reason to be afraid of them.
I think it just startled. I was getting a massage, and the massage therapist just noticed it, and I think it startled them. But I feel the gentleness and very wise, and I feel this kind of yellow green color. Have you seen the color at all, or?
It was a short remote view, and most of my remote views are kind of like a faded old color movie where it's washed out and there's not an awful lot of detail. Mm-hmm. I've had a few where it was very, very vivid. This one was not super intense to where it was like I was face-to-face with a physical being or anything. So mm-hmm. I couldn't say exact color or anything. It was somewhat greenish. But
all right.
That's part of what I try and lead people through in the book is how to become comfortable with the high strangeness, one simple exercise you can do is just walking down the street. Notice your first impression of people you're passing. And you may notice that you get a subconscious negative impression of somebody for no valid reason. Like, I grew up in the 60s, and there were all the race riots and all the news. And there was a lot of racism back then, and you were imprinted during your early years with what's going on in your culture. And so I've noticed that, and I'm careful when I see somebody. If I get an improper first impression, I say, whoopsie, race, back up, let's start over, and give them the benefit of the doubt until they prove me wrong is the way I basically approach anybody. Give them the benefit of the doubt until they prove you wrong. But if you notice your reactions to people and then go back and self-correct, you can start working on getting yourself comfortable with meeting people who are significantly different from you. And then the praying mantis won't bother you anymore.
Right, yeah. I think I'm very used to that energy around me. But the ones you were talking about, the clicking, that might bother me a little bit if that happened.
Well, one of my friends had a launch and was face to face with some spider people. I might still have trouble with spiders. You know, kind of like Harrison Ford, I don't like spiders or snakes.
Uh-huh.
So I've still got to work on myself on some of that, but it's an evolutionary process.
Sometimes I feel like something walking on my bed, and I think it's my cat, but my cat's not around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, are there beings that sort of look like jaguars or lions or something?
You're probably
getting
more into demonic stuff, and Sierra might be more able to help you with that.
There is definitely a feline race, and they're very, very benevolent.
Yes. Oh, good.
Put out the unconditional love and the oneness with everybody you meet, and stay at that high vibratory level, and be confident that that nothing less can enter your space. Put out the intention that you only wish to work with those who are working for the highest good of humanity and the planet, and you should be perfectly safe.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for calling, Sandy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
How are you today?
Pretty good. What's up?
Hang on, I just clicked the wrong button here. We're going to pick up another caller, but I just wanted to interject that it's always important to remember that any of the benevolent races, of which they are definitely in the majority, will respect the prime directive of non-interference, and they will respect your free will. So if anyone ever finds himself in a condition, in a situation where you're not sure, remember that your free will be respected, and you have to establish your own parameters. So if you get out a little bit farther than you are ready to, you can always say, "Oh, you know, I changed my mind. I'm you know, not ready for this yet." So always know that you have the free will to assert your will.
Yeah, we've always noticed in our field outings that the least psychologically prepared person is the limiting factor. A craft or something may come into the point that the first person starts to feel uncomfortable, and that just kind of sets the limit of the encounter for the evening.
Which proves that you are dealing with with the benevolent races,
right?
Because they will not endanger, in what would be, I guess, in their eyes, a child who hasn't matured enough to handle it. So they will never do harm. And that, like I said, it proves that you were dealing with the benevolent majority.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I say in one of my exercises, real quick, is that if you prepare yourself and put the intention out that you wish to meet these people, and then you have an experience, if it starts to become too much, if you simply just say, "Give me a moment, I need a little time to center," take some deep breaths, etc., they'll hold their distance and give you time. I mean, they've come all this way to interact with you. They'll give you time to get yourself collected if you have the ability to regain your composure if you've started to lose it. So just ask for a little time and space to get yourself collected, do a few deep breaths, and then say, "Okay, I'm ready to move a little closer." And they seem to respect your psychological well-being as well as your physical well-being. I've never had a problem, never met one I didn't like.
Oh, great. We have another caller with a question for you. This is John from Tulsa. You're on the air.
Hey,
hello, John.
Long time no see. I just now bought your book, so you can count on on another Amazon sale.
Oh, okay.
But I was wondering if you've ever talked much about our trip up the conifer with Adam Apollo, the things that transpired that night that were really interesting.
Well, I mentioned a little bit of it in my book, but why don't you launch into it from your perspective here?
Well, normally when we would go up there, it would just be just a few of us. But this night there was supposed to have been I don't know if it was Earth Day or what the occasion was.
Sacred Earth Conference, and the conference got canceled, but Adam Apollo was in town, and we invited him to come up and join us and do some ceremony there to kind of center the Earth energies and stuff.
Exactly. So instead of just being the three or four of us, there was about 30 or 40 of us. So there was a lot of people, and it was a cloudy night, and we weren't quite sure how things were going to work out. But a group of people sat in a big circle, and do you call it cloud busting, cloud bursting? And we all did this meditation, and then right above us, this hole in the cloud just opens up around us. And we were able to go through with the evening, but we did a great meditation, some great working, and afterwards the skies kind of came alive, if I remember everything correctly. It was a great experience.
Well, we were doing the meditation, and Adam Apollo is one of these people who can work on multiple levels of consciousness simultaneously. I'm not that good yet, but. He spotted this craft down in the southeast sky, bright light down there, and he just pops up there in consciousness to see what's going on. And he said it was like a sterile, bright white operating room inside, and a bunch of ETs of different races all working together, and a bunch of them were clustered around what looked like a pool in the middle of the floor. And he's kind of brash. He just said, hey, what's going on? What's up? What you looking at? And they kind of motioned him to come over, and he looks. And in this pool in the floor, it was like a viewport. And they were watching our circle meditating down in the meadow from the craft. And so then he came back as the group is coming out of the meditation and opening our eyes, and the rest of us are seeing this craft down in the southeast. We watched it for a few minutes. I said, there's not supposed to be any planets down there, because I checked the astronomy charts before we go. And about that time, it made this... big swoop. It was like an upside down comet. It went down and to the right, and then back up and shot off in the opposite direction. So it was very obviously letting us know it was not an aircraft, not a satellite. And then Adam told us what he'd seen when he was up there. So they were just giving us some confirmation with a very, very distinctive departure there. But Adam saw it from the other side also. So they were interested in what we were doing. It was a pretty interesting night. Now, you mentioned the number of people there. I counted 29. One of the other guys counted 30. I'm not sure whether one of us miscounted or whether we had an extra visitor for a while.
That could have been. I remember there was quite a few, as opposed to the normal small amount that would meet up there. But
mm-hmm. He's got a
I'm in Tulsa now, so I missed the activities.
Mm-hmm.
Just going up the mountain.
Well, we're still having snow up here in Evergreen, but hopefully next month we'll be able to start getting out and doing some field outings.
Yeah, they were great.
There
was the one where we had those crazy storms that blew in out of nowhere and dumped rain and dumped hail and sounded like the thunder was right behind us.
It hit his house and blew out his computer. Remember?
Yeah.
Or maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't. Well, when he went back down to his house afterwards, his computer was fried. The lightning had hit his house. So.
Yeah, no, that was. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he did tell me that. But, hopefully I'll get back to Denver pretty soon, and we can do some more.
Well, like I say, start your own group out there. The more the merrier, actually. The more people that start to have their own contact experiences and start to evolve to more and more advanced experiences, the sooner it will be safe for our neighbors to move openly among us and visit and get reunited. I think it's going to happen pretty soon, and the more people that can start the process, I think the sooner it's going to happen.
Sure. Yeah, I'm trying to get a few groups together out here. I'm running one. I'm running the or helping to run the Rosicrucian meetup group, and we're trying to get a lot of we're building up a lot of interest with that. But I definitely would like to try to get some people together to go out into the areas away from the city to try to do some work. So if you know of anybody in Tulsa that would be interested, you can point them my way.
Yeah, I'd connected you with one guy. I don't know whether you ever were able to hook up, but I'll try and look up his email address again if he's still around out there.
Sure. Yeah, I never did hear from him, but I definitely think that this sort of work needs to happen all over so that we can kind of move beyond where we are now in consciousness.
Yeah, I think that as more and more people become aware of the larger realities and comfortable with it, that we will become, well, just like Sierra, more self-governing and less governable. And maybe that's what scares the puppet masters of the planet, is that we won't march off to war as their pawns for the benefit of the oil companies anymore. We'll just say no.
Well, sure. And one thing I think, and I'll let you go, because I'm sure you have other callers, but I think one thing that people really need to, I don't know how exactly people would get behind this, but living in cities especially, we're losing our connection with the stars. I mean, even here in Tulsa, you're lucky to see just a few stars at night, and I think that's really helping to remove us from the cosmic equation.
Yeah. There is an organization called the International Dark Skies Association that works on trying to get downcast lighting standards for all the store signs and highway signs and stuff, so that everything is shielded and only shines the light downward, and it allows a lot better view of the night sky. And you can look them up on the internet and support their work. That'll help. But I'm fortunate to live up here in the mountains west of Denver, and I can step out in my front driveway and the Milky Way is just right out there in my face. It's just really nice, and most of the people don't even run their porch lights up here.
I know, it's beautiful. I really miss it. So, but anyway, I will listen to the rest of the show online here, and it was nice talking to you, Don.
Okay, great. Hope to see you again soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling, John. Bye-bye.
Arielle.
Yes.
I think that before we run out of time here, if Don can talk about where people can go and get his book, and then he wanted to end up with reciting a poem to close out the day. So just keeping that in mind, why don't we launch towards that?
Well, that's fine, because I have no more callers with questions at this point. So go ahead, and besides Amazon.com, where
can
people get your
book? Amazon.com. You can get it through my website, which is evolutionthroughcontact.com. And there's a couple options there, either the Amazon connection or directly through the CreateSpace, which is the publisher. And I deliberately went with a self-publishing route, because I didn't want any editor saying, you can't say this, it's too controversial, or having any editorial content or control over the book. So I did it myself. We're publishing it ourselves, and nobody, other than coordinating with Sierra and Tashina to make sure I had things as accurate as possible, nobody has exercised any editorial control over what I say in the book. So I was able to fully tell my story without restriction.
Great.
If you want an autographed copy, the best way at the moment is you go to Amazon.com and look up the book, and then look through the booksellers. And my little online store is ETC Books, Evolution Through Contact. And I've got a link on there where you can order an autographed copy. And then I just sign them here at the house and send them out. Put a note in the comments on how you want it endorsed. And just be aware that I'm an airline pilot. I'm often gone for up to a week at a time. So for a customized autograph, it may take a little more than the standard 2 days to get shipped.
Okay, but it'd be better because you'll have your personal autograph on it.
Yep. Although
that's
I do need to generate some activity on Amazon to start to get noticed there. So if people order it through Amazon, if they would then come back and write a review about the book, that would be immensely helpful at getting it noticed and out to the larger world there, the people who are just starting to wake up and could really use the information.
Well, that's great, and we have thousands of people that listen to our show, so everyone go to Amazon and get the book.
Yeah, and then write reviews, and if we get thousands of reviews, then it'll start to get noticed out there.
That's great. Everybody can do a little bit, and together there's a big piece of the puzzle that's available. So, well, we have less than 5 minutes to go, so do you want to do the
closing? Before we get started with that, I just wanted to thank you, Dawn. Thank you for everything it is that you've done for me, the stand that you've been for me, the teacher that you've been for me, the guide that you've been for me, and the friend that you've been for me. So I would like everyone out there to be able to experience you as I have and being able to order this book and work inside of the work that you've done is as close as it'll get. And I know that in the future you'll be doing conferences, book signings, and you'll be able to get out there a little bit more, get yourself exposed to people. But I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything it is that you've done for me.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure, and it was great that you trusted me enough to follow my advice and let me prove that what had worked for me would work for others, and that it did work marvelously well for you. So that was great satisfaction. So,
wonderful.
Should I launch into this last poem?
Absolutely.
Okay, this one is called Evolution, which really kind of fits with the book and closes it out. What's an average person to do when your government no longer represents you? You can deny it, or you can hide, or you can fight. But you have to decide. I am a citizen of the United States, a party to all the great debates, but it no longer makes me proud. I feel compelled to speak my mind out loud, and I have written an awful lot of letters to congressmen and senators. My government does things in my name that make me drop my head in shame. We didn't free Iraq for its masses, but instead for the people that make auto gases. We humans are all much more the same. The major difference is in our name. We all want the same outcome. Peace, food, and hope for everyone. I've considered myself a citizen of the world without national flag unfurled. I feel more akin to the Afghan herder than to our leaders when they commit murder. But then I met some people from afar and discovered it matters not your home star. So as I now conclude this short verse, I consider myself a citizen of the universe.
Oh, that was really good. gave me chills there at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what we're all becoming, is citizens of the universe. And the indications are that what we have gained through our three-dimensional adventure here will be in great demand around the universe, and we will be going out to other planets and helping other civilizations evolve. We're ready to launch out into universal citizenship.
We are indeed. And I want to thank you so much, Don and Sierra and Sahar, for hosting the switchboard. As I said earlier, Lavendar will be back next week. And you can find Don's book at Amazon.com and also evolutionthroughcontact.com. So with that, thank you so much, Dawn.
You're most welcome.
And we will be back next week. It will be our final broadcast with the three of us before we leave for France the following week. And then Anastasia will be with you while we're on tour in southern France. So the show will continue with Anastasia in our absence. So with that, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And remember to tell your friends about our show. And we will look to see you next week. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.